How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a pleasure to welcome Professor Nick Loy. He's a professor of modern warfare at King's College London, the author of Some Years Past, Our Conversation, The Western Front. Now the next part, The Eastern Front, A History of the Great War, 1914 to 1918. And this is very unknown to me, and so it was a great pleasure to learn what had often been mentioned as Russia versus Austria-Hungary. Always the Austria-Hungarians were begging for German troops. And in our conversation 3 years ago about the Western Front, there was also the attention of these men, Hindenburg and Ludendorff, who would eventually show up on the Western Front and be the drivers of the closing stages of the war when America got in. And their reputation, however, was built on their conduct in the Eastern Front. So it was all a mystery to me. This new book, enormously detailed and persuasive, introduces the Eastern Front where the Germans won. That's critical to understand what we're about to describe. Germany wins in the East. The defeat, as we remember it 100 years or more later, was in the West. Professor Nick, congratulations. A very good evening to you. We begin, however, not in a battlefield, but on the assassination of Archduke in Sarajevo in the summer of 1914. His death triggers a cavalcade of decision-making across this vast map of Europe. Why? What was so brittle about Austria-Hungary at this moment that the aging monarch, emperor, Franz Joseph, felt he was compelled to, what did he say, grasp the sword after so many years of peace? Good evening to you, Nick.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me on. It's great to talk about these things. And that question, you know, why does the assassination spark the First World War is one that historians always go back to, because it's almost that point at which all the cataclysms of the 20th century kind of spring from in many ways. And so that question is a deep one, and it's very difficult to answer. But it's obviously a combination of factors, I think, which means the assassination becomes so much more than simply the kind of killing or the murder of one member of the Austro-Hungarian royal family. It becomes an event that brings all of these power struggles, which have been going on in the decades before the war, these kind of sense of weakness or of decline that many European states have felt. Austria-Hungary feels it, Germany feels it, Russia feels it, a sense that things are getting away from them, slipping away. And therefore, for Austria-Hungary, this is a moment where they feel they have to strike back. They have to put Serbia, this rising power, this quite aggressive state, in its place, because if they don't, they will be made to look weak. There will be this will kind of confirm all the fears that they had in the Habsburg Empire in the years coming up to the war of defeat, of decline. The empire was bound to fall, it was crumbling, and therefore, unless we make a firm stand here, nobody will believe anything we say anymore. And so that's one of the reasons why they feel they have to take action against Serbia. But of course, you know, this is not seen, you know, they're not allowed to do that because the other powers get involved.
They do get involved right away. There are some coincidences here that look like the devil's in charge. I believe the president of France, Poincaré, is in, at the time in Petersburg, visiting with the Tsar's family. And Germany and Russia and France are allies at this time. They will become part of the Entente. Now, the assassination of an archduke in Sarajevo and the belief in Vienna that Serbia did this, in fact, we know now there was Serbian hand everywhere in an organization sometimes called the Black Hand, and the assassination was driven by by Serbian state security. The Tsar, though, why does he get involved? Why does the Russian mobilization follow immediately without an exploration of the assassination or any exchanges between Franz Joseph and Nicholas and the Kaiser? Why didn't they talk about it?
Well, I think there's a similar feeling of decline and concern in St. Petersburg about this, that if we don't protect Serbia, our chief client state in the region will be seen to be weak. And if we allow the Austrians to get away with this in the way that they annexed Bosnia Herzegovina before the war, and again, we'll be made to feel weak. And so obviously there are communication, there is the sort of letters between the Kaiser and the Tsar, and there is the sense of actually things rapidly becoming out of control. And of course, the Russians believe that they need to act quickly, and therefore they know that their army is going to take quite a while to mobilize. And so therefore they want to get on the front foot and act quickly. And of course, this really sets the cat amongst the pigeons and of course gets Germany very, very concerned about this. And so very rapidly, the assassination and the fallout of it brings about those, the cataclysm of the Eastern Front and then, of course, the Western Front.
Yes, the mobilization between July and August is rapid, and it's like dominoes falling. Russia is half mobilizes, so France and then Germany, and all of the states now are poised for a contest, which, once again, they believe is going to be over quickly. There will be a battle. It will end. The German anticipation, however, was not the Eastern Front. That was to be a holding action. Their anticipation was the Western Front, the plan to overwhelm France immediately the way they had done in 1870. This is driven by a man named Falkenhayn, who is the overall commander of the German forces, but comes to be the dominant player with the Austro-Hungarian forces. What do we need to know about Falkenhayn?
Well, I mean, there were a number of key players on the German side at the start of the war. I mean, obviously, we've already mentioned the Kaiser. The chief of the general staff at the start of the war is Helmut von Moltke, and he is one of the key players as well. And he effectively has a nervous breakdown in September, mid-September. So only a matter of weeks before the war breaks out, he has a nervous breakdown and feels that he just simply cannot carry on. Of course, he's moved aside. And then you have the Prussian war minister, Erich von Falkenhayn, who comes in. And he's the man that basically leads the German war effort for the next 2 years. And so Falkenhayn is a very important figure. And what I detail in the book very much is Falkenhayn's, the attempt by Germany to build a war strategy to win and to respond to the events, because they're not able to win in the West. He tries that. They try that, but they can't do it. Ultimately, the French and the British are able to hang on in the West, and therefore Germany is faced with a two-front war. And so that's Falkenhayn's issue, is how to deal and build a war strategy in a very difficult situation, and one where not only are they not able to win in the West, but you also have Austria-Hungary becoming increasingly fragile as the war goes on, very quickly, actually. The war starts badly, and I think that's what you see, is this war just gets very bad very, very quickly. It's like they go off a cliff, or they go off a huge waterfall, all the powers, and they cannot get back to it. And you see that very, very clearly in the August and September of 1914. It's an absolute, it's a roller coaster.
Yes, you mentioned that they were arrogant, all of them, in thinking that war was manageable. And what happens is escalation and the unknown. The replacement of von Moltke with Falkenhayn happened after a success in the East, but again, it wasn't considered primary. It was secondary to the battle for Paris. This is Hindenburg and Ludendorff at Tannenberg. What did the Russians learn from Tannenberg? That this is East Prussia, after all. The Germans are playing on their home court. Why did Russia attack?
Well, Russia is, it wants to fight the Austrians. The Austrians, it knows, are weak. It has territorial gains that it wants to gain against Austria. Obviously, it wants to push its border out to the Carpathians, the Tsar sees as sort of natural border of the Russian Empire in the West. So they want to fight the Austrians, but of course they've got you know, 7/8 of the German army are going to go west. And so this is the French plan. The French are constantly screaming at the Russians that if you're going to fight now, you must send as much as you can against Germany. You will never have a better chance of defeating, of marching on Berlin. But the Russians don't really want to do that. But then they do send two armies into East Prussia. I guess it's the sort of minimum they could get away with, really. But the two armies are uncoordinated. They're not entirely sure what they're doing. Two army commanders don't really talk to each other. And then you have this situation where the German 8th Army, which is the only force they have in the East, is able to hold off one of those armies, rapidly redeploy, and conduct a double envelopment of the Russian 2nd Army at Tannenberg in between about the 26th and the 30th of August 1914. And three entire corps are destroyed or captured. And so Tannenberg is one of the most decisive battles of the war, and it decimates the Russian army in the north and sends a huge signal to the Tsar that the Germans are really to be feared. And so it really gets the Russian war effort off to a very, very bad start. They're able to do quite well against the Austrians, but they can never deal with the Germans. And so Tannenberg and the two German commanders who are mainly responsible for it, the 8th Army commander, Paul von Hindenburg, and his chief planning aide, Erich Ludendorff, and they work very, very closely together. And they are the people that actually pull Tannenberg off. And of course, they come out of this, you know, with a glowing reputation. The men that actually entered 1914 with a huge victory. And of course, that means that they're increasingly influential and powerful. And Tannenberg, at a stroke, almost reorientates German strategy. Previously to the war, it had been to win in the West. After Tannenberg, Hindenburg and Ludendorff say, no, we can win in the East.
The book is The Eastern Front. Nick Lloyd, Professor of Modern Warfare at King's College in London. We're going to turn now to the Austro-Hungarian Empire getting into battle with the Russians. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa Welcome Bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.